Are we all back? Maybe. All right, well.
I just
want
to make sure we all have chairs and everything.
Wait a minute. Okay, I really screwed it up.
What?
I really screwed it up. You got to come look at what I'm looking at.
I doubt that, Junior. What could you have screwed up?
It just minimized.
You.
Okay. Yeah, you're unmuted. Ready to
so
go.
I want to get rid of that. Can I just exit out?
Yeah.
I'm not wearing my glasses.
There's the mouse. It does. The mouse doesn't like you.
I know. So the Zoom tech should be introducing people online.
I was wondering about that because I can't see who's in the vendo.
Well, can you introduce either you, Ellen, or Paul should introduce the folks online.
Okay. I can do that. All right. So we'll start with Paul.
Paul.
Jinru, I'm going to include you. Even though that's your name's not listed. Betty.
Betty.
Yeshe.
Yeshe.
Susan.
Susan.
Mark.
Mark.
Tyler.
Tyler.
Paulette.
Paula.
Karen.
Karen.
Bob.
Bob.
Mick.
Mick.
Dave.
Dave.
Joan.
Joan.
Bill.
Bill.
Aaron.
Aaron.
Paul Schertz.
Paul.
The other Joan.
John.
Sabrina.
Sabrina.
And Ruth Ann. That is our online community tonight.
Ruth Ann. And so in the Zundo, we usually start here and you say your name and then we all say it and we bow.
Rich.
Rich.
Anna.
Anna.
Drew.
Drew.
Jill.
Jill. Katie.
Coral.
Carson.
So, welcome everybody. I'm very much looking forward to your talk, Ellen. I just have one announcement, and that is that this Sunday we have a guest speaker. Raise your hand if you've heard Thomas before. He's really wonderful, Thomas Brunner. He is a Buddhist teacher as well as a Dharma brother of Domio's, and he comes from Dharma Rain, and he gives really wonderful talks. So I encourage everybody to join either online or here in the Zendo. He will be here in the Zendo. So the more people we can get here locally, that would be great. And I think that is the only announcement that we have. So back to you, Karen.
You mean me? You mean me?
I'll say okay. Karen.
You I'm said Karen. Ellen. That's okay.
Sorry.
You know, I'll answer to whatever. So thanks, everybody, for being here in Domio's absence, I should say. I'm pleased to be facilitating a conversation. And that's how I'm thinking of it, really, because, there's a lot of content here. And I am happy to be doing this primarily because I have so many questions about this chapter and the need for clarification on some points that I hope we can kind of as a group come to through some questions and answers. I also keep thinking that, you know, as I read the book, how compelling it is to read the words of your teacher's teacher. It keeps occurring to me. I think that's like an opportunity you don't always get. And so I'm also hearing Domio's voice in a lot of it because so much of it is echoed in the podcast. So I think what I'm going to do is talk a little bit about the chapter, but also maybe intersperse some of her definitions, descriptions from the podcast. Her podcast, by the way, on this was quite a while ago. Number 37, podcast episode number 37 from November of 2017. So she's up to 188 or something like that. So 37 was a long time ago. Anyway, so as we talk, just feel free to come in with questions and comments and your take on things, since I am not Domio. Okay, so I want to just start with saying that when I first heard the term samadhi power, and I don't mean to be irreverent here, but it brought to mind a superhero, samadhi power. And maybe it's not too far off in terms of what it connotes. Karma relationship, which is the second half of the chapter's title, is also a powerful concept and also a complex one for me. Samadhi is an ancient Sanskrit word that means establish or make firm. And it's often translated as one-pointedness of mind. And I'm the first to admit that I found it challenging to kind of internalize some of these ideas. So Kyogen starts with this statement. I'm going to read a couple of passages as we go. The two things necessary for enlightenment or deep awakening are samadhi power and karma relationship. Samadhi power is becoming really deeply familiar with the unconditioned space where you shift your allegiance, as it were, from the stuff that arises, your opinions, your likes and dislikes, to the space in which stuff appears. And he goes on to say that samadhi power comes from time spent in deep zazen. And that makes sense. We know how much emphasis is put on growing your practice. And actually, maybe I'll copy and paste a question into the chat, but I was going to use two statements that he makes as the basis of a discussion for our breakout rooms. So this is the first one, and I'll try to cut and paste it in there before we go into chats. This is the first quote that I thought maybe could lead to in conversation. It goes like this: through time spent in zazen, our perspective shifts from the phenomena that moves through body and mind to the space it moves through. As we shift our perspective to the space itself, a profound change begins to happen in us. Okay, so hold on to that idea to discuss. I'm particularly interested in the idea of the space it moves through. And I would love to hear your understanding of that. Kyogen then goes on to define karma relationship as referring to the master-disciple relationship or your koan work. And so it's pointing to a particular thing. And then this is the second quote that I'm going to use, or suggest, I should say, for our breakout rooms, which is, enlightenment is liberated functioning in the world. We are bringing practice into daily life, learning to let go of our habit energies and patterns and find that spaciousness in difficult circumstances. That's the second kind of passage for discussion. So really I'm thinking about what does the term spaciousness connote there? But feel free to kind of talk about that whole point. Kyogen talks about there being a ripening of conditions that leads to the potential for a profound awakening. And that when it happens, we transform samsara into nirvana. This moving into is prajna, or wisdom, which is functioning in the world from unconditioned space. So an enlightened person is one with their karma. And he goes on to tell the story of Baizong and the fox, story I've heard before, where the monk is discussing the, you know, kind of bemoaning the fact that he has spent many lifetimes with a fox. Perhaps because of his not fully coming to terms or coming to grips with his own karma. He's using that to explain karmic consequence as enlightened action arising from not being deceived by karma. So again, Zen is about prajna, wisdom, action. So I'm always remembering that in this book, each chapter, like these are talks that he gave, right? So these are Dharma talks that he was giving at Dharma Rain, not just a book of, you know, essays. These are kind of living things. And I'd be curious actually if Domio was present for some of them. I would assume so, actually. And he says that at Dharma Rain, quote, we start people out with zazen and precept study in order to drop attachment to everything and come to the spaciousness of big mind. Again, there's that spaciousness word again. So I invite you to examine that. But I'm also looking at, if you have the book, the quote on the bottom of page 36. So that's where he says the spaciousness of big mind, the study of the self that occurs in the precepts is a way of reflecting on our habit energy, impulses, and self-deception. We challenge those by referring to the precepts as a model of enlightened action and mind. This work that we do of examining ourselves in light of the precepts is a way of moving into karma relationship with the Dharma itself. It also occurs in the Sangha and with a teacher. So as I said, I want to kind of like synthesize a little bit because it was really useful for me, the podcast episode with this. So kind of like match some points because Domio emphasized some slightly different things that I find interesting. So first she expands on the definition of both samadhi and karma relationship. She says that samadhi is about a direct real life experience of the non-dual aspect of reality, or the absolute as opposed to the relative. She also, on the podcast website, she posted a chart that has some very useful definitions with regard to all this. And I just feel like the entire episode is a really good supplement to the chapter. She expands on the importance of deepening our meditation practice, as does Kyogen, as a primary path to samadhi power, and explains what power refers to. So this is, you know, one of the things I found most interesting. Where does the power word come in? That's sort of the first thing that occurred to me. Like, what does that even mean? And she attributes this term, and I guess he does too, to her Dharma grandmother, Roshi Kennett. So that's Kyogen's teacher. So I think she kind of wasn't totally sure that it came from her. But she defines that power as the ability to drop dualistic thinking and to, quote, allow subject and object to fall away and experience the absolute aspect of reality. And she also says that power describes the energy and effort needed to cultivate samadhi, despite the fact that samadhi is more about not doing than doing. That's sort of her take on samadhi. And then moving on to karma relationship, which she calls the other side of practice. So she really does start the talking about like that these are two sides. These are the two sides, samadhi, power, and karma relationship. And she also defines karma as she has before, according to its Sanskrit definition, literally meaning action or deed. It was only later on that it has, you know, I think this has always confused me too, or kind of tripped me up, that it only was later on that it came to kind of mean cause and effect, or moral cause and effect. And that interferes with my understanding of it a little bit. But she emphasized that Buddha was very clear that moral behavior was an absolute requirement for progressing on the path to liberation. Working on karma means taking responsibility for our behavior and carefully studying the process of cause and effect so we can learn how to do better. So that clears up a lot for me. And she says, what we're ultimately looking for in Buddhist practice is an integration of absolute and relative, or samadhi, power, and karma relationship. So I think that's a really excellent, clear tying together of those concepts. What I was thinking before we go to breakout rooms, does anybody have any alternate interpretations of what I said? I'm conscious of having, you know, bringing my own thoughts and ideas and experience as you do to this. And I'd be glad to hear anybody else's take on this chapter before we go. And then maybe when we come back from that, we can also continue the conversation. But anybody in the Zendo or anybody on Zoom want to chime in? No? No takers? Yeah. Somebody in the Zendo.
Okay, Jinryu wants to say something.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a couple of things, very non-specific. And that is that this terminology, samadhi power and karma relationship, was introduced to me back when she did her first talk on it. And that was around the time of that podcast episode. And I can tell you back then, now I only started in 2016, but if that was in 2017, I did not get what she was talking about. So if there are people online or in here who really don't get what she's talking about, that's okay. But the other thing I was going to say, and I have listened to that podcast since that time two more times, and I don't know where I am with it. I'm going to try it one more time now that we've read this chapter. We're going to discuss it. When I read the chapter today, I was moved to tears. So somewhere it's getting across to me. And I did find the way Kogan spoke about it was just beautiful. So that's all. Encouragement.
Yeah, I'm glad that I'm not the only one who needs to read it and or listen to the podcast episode multiple times in order to penetrate my brains. It's just there are a couple of items there that just keep tossing around that are difficult. The first quote, especially. And again, I'll let everybody talk about it as they want to. And as we shift our perspectives to the space itself, he's talking about, in Zazen, a profound change begins to happen in us. Can anybody in the Zendo or on Zoom relate to that? Has had that experience, perhaps? That's what I'm really looking for. What is that experience? What is that change? What is the nature of the change? Mark, that's you.
Yeah, the phrasing of samadhi power used to trip me up because when we talk about power, or are we talking about a power that's at my disposal, or are we talking about a power that's not at my disposal, right? Power implies use, right? But the transformation I found most helpful is that the heart of that samadhi power seems to be trust and or possibly courage, right? And it's that way that sitting in Zazen returns you face to face with the fact that there is something you can entrust yourself to, because here you are entrusting yourself to it over and over again. That seems to be the heart of that transformation. The karma relationship I am still tinkering with.
When I was at Zen Mountain Monastery last month, I was there for Sajiki, which was really an incredible thing to see. But also the abbot there was giving a talk on karma. Didn't use the term karma relationship as far as I know, or as far as I remember. But there were many surrounding ideas that continue to be difficult for me. And I keep waiting for it to just kind of to have that aha moment with it all, which might never happen. I don't know. because I've been thinking these thoughts for years, truly. So I'm not really sure. And then the other quote, and this is something that I've heard Domyo in several different contexts talk about, the spaciousness, that idea of spaciousness. We said, we're bringing practice into daily life, learning to let go of our habit energies and patterns and find that spaciousness in difficult circumstances. How do we define spaciousness? Yep, Tyler.
I don't know if I have like a definition, I guess, of spaciousness, but what started to make me think about it was when we find ourselves in difficult situations, and we're getting frustrated, even in something ridiculous, in the supermarket lineup, because the checkout person's going way too slow. But you can feel things coming down on you, right? When you're frustrated and difficult, you can almost feel a lack of space, and you're getting angry, or whatever. It's learning these skills to find the spaciousness in that situation. In this, he talks a few times, in this about just that. Oh yeah, like turning, he mentions turning samsara into nirvana, and like just that in these everyday situations when we need to be like doing these things is our work. And I guess that's what I think when I try to think about spaciousness, I think about being really frustrated, upset about something that's beyond our control or whatever. But then when you can let that go, you all of a sudden feel that space in which to like do your work. I don't know if that's at all what they're talking about. That's what it visually made me think about.
Yeah. Mick, do you want
to? Yeah, I think kind of the way that I saw both of this working, and I'm not sure if I'm doing this right, but to me, it kind of reminded me of the skandhas, and I don't remember them all on my own, so I'm really working off here. But to me, I think the connection between the samadhi power and the karma relationship is, I mean, I guess like to sit in zazen is to kind of like slow things down and to kind of like experience the way that you interact with reality and the way that we tend to like grab onto things and to engage with them in like a very, very limited circumstance. And then, you know, to turn that into karma relationship is to be in the world and to have those like worldly things really happen that you really grab onto and to in, you know, not when you're sitting on a cushion, to be able to understand how consciousness kind of like arises and how you interact with it. I think to me that it's sort of like the interplay between theory and practice. It's like you kind of get a shot at understanding the way that it works in zazen, and then you go out and you live it in your karma relationship, and kind of, you know, the way that they both work out is kind of the way that I saw this going.
Oh. Thank you. Actually, Soki, you have your hand up.
Say for me, a few things. When I'm experiencing spaciousness, on one instance, no matter, well, three different things. One, I'm living with complete and utter faith, and it's as if I am resting back into cloud arms that are supporting me, and with 100% confidence, I surrender to that, and I know that whatever I say will be the most compassionate and needed thing for another to receive, or for the state for me to receive information, or to share information. And it's always like, wow, or guiding in a very liberating way, or when people perhaps are agitated, or maybe they're even saying specific things to or about me, I'm in this place of observing their behavior, but I'm not experiencing their anger, their whatever it is. I'm in this place of it's an aliveness. It's very much alive. It's very much engaged, and yet I'm neutral. I'm not reactivity. And then, as I shared this on Saturday, and this is not limited, but I'm reading a Chan book on silent illumination. And he describes the space, and this is not unique to him. So if you have a room of furniture, the furniture are are all our karmic bits, all our stuff, all our reactivity. And we can move them all around. We can move them any way we want to. We can stack them on top of each other, spread them out, do all sorts of things with them, but they're just still stuff. But the room, the spaciousness, is the space in which we are moving all that furniture around. And the space doesn't care one way or the other how you move that furniture around. It's completely neutral. But that's the spaciousness. And that's the wisdom and the awareness for me.
Erin, you want to chime in before we go to rooms and Paulette too?
Yes. I was listening to Soki and describing about, you know, being present and then almost like being in embraced in cloud arms. And it just made me think about this word spaciousness. And I don't know if I'm on the mark or not, but I kind of think perhaps, and I think we've all had these moments where you're present with somebody or you're present with something and you're present and you're not judging it. And you're not having any kind of opinion and you're not, or you don't have any kind of motivation for attainment or like, I'm going to get something out of this. Just being fully present without any of those attachments or judgments. And I don't know if that's kind of what Soki was speaking to, but that's kind of, I think, my idea of what spaciousness might mean in this context. You know, and I definitely, I know it when I'm not there, when I'm with a person or if I come back feeling like angry or I'm judging them and that's when I know I'm not there, you know? So yeah, that's kind of my two cents on what I think spaciousness might be.
Paulette, did you have something to say or do you want to?
Erin kind of said a little bit of what I wanted to say. Thanks a lot. No, I'm kidding. and Tyler, too, like that part on page 34 where he says, it is not simply resting in unconditioned mind. In the beginning, we shift our awareness from content to space, and that's where the work starts. So like Erin was saying, you know, when we're perceiving something before the judgment kicks in, it's like we're perceiving it and it's open and it's awareness. And so we're paying more attention to space and less to content. I don't know if I'm reading that right. And later we have to remember not to get entangled in emptiness. So it's like walking the middle path, like not getting too caught up in like our judgment mind, but also not like completely spacing out and going, you know, without hanging on to this place of non-reaction, we then move into the world. When that happens, we transform samsara into nirvana, like Tyler was talking about. So like that kind of being in the middle where we're not going into our judgment and our preconceived notions of things. And then at the same time, not just like going into the state of like indifference, but like being present, but also non-reactive, judgy. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Should we go to breakout rooms? Is it time for that?
We can certainly do that. How long would you like to stay in the breakout rooms?
I don't know. What do you think, everybody? 10, 15? What's best? I posted I pasted the question, where those two passages in the chat. So if that's useful, you can do that, or just anything from the chapter or anything from pertaining to these two concepts of samadhi power and karma relationship and the intersection between them, the space between them. So yeah, why don't we go to like 15 minutes?
Okay, sounds good.
Yep.
Today, and I thought of like
we should all be back now.
We're all back.
Yep.
But does anybody want to offer some thoughts about, you know, what you talked about? Especially with regard to, perhaps with regard to spaciousness, with regard to, as we shift our perspective to the space itself, a profound change begins to happen in us. Those are two items, if you talked about, or anything that you talked about.
I did want to mention, I know that Yeshe Soki had talked about the furniture in the room analogy, which is from Guo Gu's book, which is wonderful. But that's actually what I had thought about too. And one of the things that he had mentioned in there is that, like, when your room fills up with furniture, with your sort of like karmic baggage, it's easy to forget what the room looks like. And when you walk in, you focus on all of the furniture that's there and not the spaciousness of the room. And so I always kind of like, that analogy has stuck with me for a long time, and I'm really glad that Yeshe Soki brought it up again, because it's a really good one.
Yeah. Aaron, is your hand up, or is that the leftover from before?
That's me. Yeah. Okay. I was just listening to what Mick was saying about, you know, the analogy with the room and not so much paying attention to the first, you know, but also that's kind of like paying attention to not just what the room is filled with, but the emptiness in the room, like the empty space. Then, you know, like in art, what you would call negative space, you know, and just kind of being aware of both aspects of that, the positive space of the setting that you're in, and then the negative space, the empty spaces. All of the space. Yeah, that's all I have.
Just, yeah, one other, on the top of page 37, and we've kind of been, we circled this a few times already, but, you know, bringing in the idea of the precepts here, you know, not just zazen and not just karma, you know, but the idea of, he says, this work that we do of examining ourselves in light of the precepts is a way of moving into karma relationship with the Dharma itself. It also occurs in the Sangha and with a teacher. And he also says that, you know, we always point out that no matter how hard you try to keep the precepts, you can't do it completely, yet you have to try. Um, Yeah, I was just interested in how that idea, you know, he says that right after he talks about the, you know, the precept is a way of reflecting on our habit, energy, impulses, and self-deception. Dave?
Yes. So I think that word reflect was used deliberately there, because I feel like you're sort of describing the precepts, describing your relationship with your teacher as just a way of looking into your own sort of deficiencies, or places where you need to pay attention. Because if you were a fully awakened being, you have no use for the precepts, really, because everything you do is going to be in accord with the precepts anyway. You know, you don't need that external sort of relationship. But for the rest of us, I feel like that's just a way of holding up this thing and saying, okay, where are my blemishes? Where do I need to pay attention? You know, when I go through the precepts, different ones pop out of me at different times. I'm not always paying attention to all of them, but they have a way of pointing out to you, okay, here's what's going on with you now, right?
It's true. Phil?
Actually, Dave said some things that I was thinking about, but I think the precepts are worded the way they are and taught the way they are so that we never stop trying to be better. So if they were too easy, we could just do them and go, okay, yeah, we're done. Good. I'm good. But if they're things that are not... you know, there's so much subtlety to them, so many different applications that I don't feel like I ever need to get to a place where I've mastered all of them, unless I accidentally do, and that'll be great. But so just working at it and trying to be better, I think, is good enough for now.
Sort of in the way that the four great Bodhisattva vows are sort of impossible. You know, they're worded in an impossible way, right?
Right.
Free everyone or save everyone, but we have to try. That's the whole
thing. If we ever say, oh, I did it, I'm a Bodhisattva, well, then you know that you're not. So.
Yeah. Mick?
Yeah, I did. I think what Dave mentioned was really interesting because, you know, I think the way that the precepts for me at least relate to this idea of karma relationship is that when I'm in a bad karmic place, when I'm like struggling, like that's when the precepts really get the knives out, right? Like they're pretty easy when you're doing good and you're in a good mood and things are going well. But like when you struggle, right, that's when the friction really starts. And you can feel that because you just start all the precepts start firing like, oh man, I'm dwelling on these past mistakes, I'm blaming other people, you know, I'm indulging my anger. And I think in that way, the precepts, like when you struggle with them, is the precepts pointing out to you your sort of like karmic baggage. And so I think that's an interesting thing that I just kind of that got lodged in there, I guess.
Dave, do you have more to add to that?
Nope, my hand just never went down.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, as we kind of draw to a close, I was thinking about his last statements in the chapter. We vow to take endless rebirth in this world for the sake of living beings. And also, he goes on, this non-opposition transforms circumstances within the imperfect and conditioned world. This response from no mind, from no self, transforms the conditioned world. Anybody have any closing statements, closing ideas? Before we leave. Nada. Okay, well, so everybody, thank you. I appreciate you propping up me trying to talk about this chapter that I, you know, I kept thinking like there are other chapters that I really understand better than this one, but I will try. So thanks for it.
Thank you, Alan. That's wonderful.
Thank you, Alan.
Good job.
Thanks.
Thank you for all the resources you shared. Good evening.
Thanks, everyone.